Welcome to Journals of the Willing from the Tumbling Saber team, a part of the Star Wars Commonwealth Podcast Network. Take your first step into a larger world by checking out the Commonwealth on the web at starwarscommonwealth.com, on iTunes, Facebook, and Twitter. Everybody, welcome back to Journals of the Willing. My name is Kyle.
And I'm Steve.
All right. It's been a while. It's been a long while since we've had a Journals of the Willing sit down. So Steve, let's do a quick catch up here for everybody. How you doing?
I'm doing great. The last few weeks have been crazy. Getting used to the new job. Doing that. Finished up housework. Just kind of, chugging along.
Life getting in the way. How dare life get in the way?
Life happens. What about you?
The same. Work is crazy. Kids are crazy. Got a lot of upheaval going on at home in terms of kitchen renos and basement painting. So the house is a mess and chaos reigns supreme.
I expect to see pictures when all is done.
Yeah, my wife is all excited because we need to do a little bit of painting upstairs in the kitchen as well, just to finish that off. And she's getting all primed to do her Instagram post. She's super excited. And we really haven't had a kitchen this nice ever.
Yeah,
everything's been redone except for the floor, which was tolerable.
Right.
But yeah, no, super excited, man. We got a huge sink. It's big enough to actually bathe one of our kids in. So that's exciting. It's super nice.
Yeah, and what's the point of doing anything if you can't put it on Instagram?
Well, that's how all social credit is earned these days, isn't it?
Yes.
if it's not on Instagram, it didn't happen.
Exactly.
All right. So, we've got some catching up to do as far as Star Wars comics goes.
Yes, we do.
Yeah, man. Screaming Citadel. We broke down part one the last time we were here. And now we'll do the rest of them. So parts 2 through 5, they're going to be coming at you right here. And let's just dive right in. So Screaming Citadel 2, which came in Star Wars issue 31 by Jason Aaron and Salvador La Rocca. Now I'll just preface this by saying, I'm not a big fan of crossovers, generally speaking. But as long as you keep it to two titles and a short run, 4 to 5 issues, stretching it to 8 if you're really going to do something epic, I can live with that.
I definitely feel the same way. it's nice. It's neatly done. You can't get lost, which is a bonus.
Yeah, like I don't need to be buying 4 and 5 different titles where half of them barely reference what's going on or impact the overall crossover. So keep it tight. I appreciate what they're doing here. And I appreciate that Marvel wants to get some additional sales for Dr. Aphra. It's a character who's gained a massive amount of popularity, and deservedly so. But you know what? I got to say this issue too, not to bury the lead here, but I don't know if I've ever read a comic where so little happened. Nothing happened in this book.
No, actually... I think I read issue 2. I'm pretty sure I did. Today I read 3 through 5 in the straight shot. And I'm like, I found issue 1. I couldn't find it. I must have misplaced it. I think I put it somewhere. It has to be somewhere. But if I didn't, you could easily read issue 1 and 3 back to back. But
honestly, you would not miss a thing. You really would not miss much if you skipped over part 2. Right. I'll summarize. I have it can be summarized in 3 or 4 bullet points. So it starts with the rebels on their secret base. So I'm talking about Han, Leia, and Sana. They kind of mobilize to go save Luke and, I guess, Aphra by extension at, I forget, the Queen's planet. Then we cut to a scene with breakfast with the Queen, Aphra, and Luke as the guests of honor. And in order to prove himself, the Queen wants Luke to remove a lid over a breakfast tray with by using the Force. And you know, at this point, we have to remember we're still somewhere between A New Hope and Jedi. A New Hope and Empire. And I think we're still probably closer to A New Hope than Empire. So Luke is really not that far down the road as far as becoming a Jedi goes. And he can't do it. He can't lift this lid. And the pressure's mounting. And Aphra creates a scene. She sets off an explosive. And things are coming to a head. And the queen says, one of the queen's guards says, I'll go kill them myself. And the queen goes, no, just let the horde of creatures deal with them. Then we get this cool visual, probably the coolest part of the book. We see this horde of like mutated, familiar looking aliens. So among them, like a two-headed Ithorian and three-armed Gungans, which I thought was pretty cool. But by the end of the book ends with Han, Leia, and Sana arriving on the planet in the nick of time, but face to face with the murder droids BT and 000. So it's a bit of a standoff, and it feels like just before the rebels are able to do anything in terms of saving Luke and Aphra, they're confronted by these two violent droids, which we know to be completely homicidal. So and that was it. That was part two. And I was just checking to make sure all my pages were there. Did I miss something? No, that was it.
Well, it's pretty fortunate these issues aren't too far apart, considering that they're, you know, spread between the two titles. So you didn't have to wait too long for the third part, at least.
Yeah, but you know what? It, on top of really adding nothing to the story, I thought the art was just awful. And specifically, the facial expressions, the faces of like the humans, the rebels in this book, and especially the queen. I thought the art was just revolting in this issue. I don't know if anybody else had the same gripe as I do, but you could tell that Salvador LaRocca, who did the pencils in this, and who I previously really liked on the Star Wars title earlier on in the run, and on Darth Vader, the first volume of Darth Vader, I liked all his work, so I thought this would be a shoo-in. But some of the faces in this, oh, God, they're just terrible. I don't know if you remember them.
Not specifically with issue two, but you know, with the subsequent issues. It's a little all over the place. I think there are some pages where it's beautiful and really well done, and then some not so much. And I don't know, because apparently, it looks like they're going back and forth between the two different pencilers.
Correct.
So, you know, there's a little inconsistency there.
Oh, you get wildly different styles for sure. As far as LaRocca's work, it's fine. Everything is fine except for the faces. Luke's face is brutal. There's the scene where he's trying to lift that lid, and the Queen's guard named Vespinax has got a knife to his throat, and she's saying, "Do it, try harder," and she slams his head down into his breakfast plate, and then lifts it up again, and the look on his face is just awful. It's just so unnatural and looks borderline creepy. Like there's a lot of instances where you could tell that he was copying faces. Like he freeze framed parts of the movie and just took his renderings from that. It's like, oh God, like we recognize that. It doesn't look good.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it's just me.
I don't know. I don't know. Sometimes that happens if there's a time constraint. Maybe sometimes artists rush the work.
Yeah, I'm wondering if that might be it. Just speeding through trying to get that issue completed.
Yeah, which is unfortunate. You'd think with all the resources that, you know, Marvel would be able to kind of take their time putting these out. So I don't know. There's many factors that it could be.
Well, once you find the issue, I know you misplaced it, but once you find it, take a look and look at Luke's face and look at the Queen's face. Like the Queen just looks like a friendly clown. And she's not threatening or malevolent looking at all. She just looks like a person with white makeup on. She almost looks like she could be a queen of Naboo. No. Like, there's just nothing menacing about this character, although there should be. Right. She's threatening to eat Luke or consume his life force or whatever it is. It's bad all around as far as I'm concerned.
I definitely think it improves, but there are moments later on.
Yes, yes. Well, I mean, if you from the neck up, I find it bad, but everything else on the page is fine. But if, you know, everybody, your face is drawn, or your eyes are drawn to the faces of these characters, and it just misses by a million miles, personally speaking.
Hmm.
Then we move on to part 3 in Dr. Aphra number 7. You read that today as a refresher?
Yeah, so I read the last 3 parts, kind of, all together.
Right, so that issue kicks off. Luke and Aphra get bailed out by Han, Leia, and Sana, Han is kind of flying Aphra's ship that he's commandeered. And I got the first chuckle that I had in a while as 000 called Han the unkempt one. I thought that was hilarious. Because he seems to not like the scruffy looking unkempt comments from other people.
No. No. And it's funny that droids are picking up on it, you know?
It's that obvious. but in a little bit of a twist, when everybody's got their back up against Aphra, Luke is now defending her and saying that he went with her by his own choice, and Aphra's his friend now, and you know, to kind of back off her, which is sort of a weird role reversal.
It's an interesting dynamic, especially, you know, with Luke defending Aphra, and then you have Sana, you know, trying to convince everyone not to trust her. I think that's a fun kind of play between the three.
Yeah, no doubt. Well, they had to add some tension somewhere. Otherwise, Aphra would be dead, because Sana did try to kill her. She actually took a shot at her, and Luke blocked it with his lightsaber. You know, he has maybe that's a bit of an inconsistency where he has trouble lifting a lid off a breakfast tray, but he can block a laser blast.
Well, remember, he did practice that in A New Hope.
Yeah, he did do that in A New Hope from a remote. So I guess maybe that's what Kieran Gillen was thinking.
Mm-hmm.
Not really that egregious of a mistake, if it's even considered to be a mistake. Then there's a shootout with the heroes and the Queen's guards, and as they make their escape to somewhere to hide, they come across this colony. And so if we back up to issue 2, in the breakfast scene, when Aphra sets off the explosion at the breakfast table, these creatures, almost like something out of Alien, called the Aberson symbiotes, kind of break loose, and they're apparently these super dangerous creatures. Well, now in part 3, the heroes enter sort of this chamber where the whole colony is being kept, including the Queen. And I think it's Aphra mentions that, you know, not even the Empire will touch these things. They're that dangerous, and weaponizing them is just, it's too risky for whatever reason. So these are a new addition to Star Wars lore, I think. I've not heard of them before.
I'm just going to fact check. I want to say that these came up earlier in the Aphra series.
I would not know. That's my blind spot.
I just want to make sure I get the... I'm just trying to get the right spelling. Because I want to say that these are the creatures that... she faked her thesis on.
That's pretty
to
funny.
To get her doctorate.
It's funny that you can fake a doctorate in the Star Wars galaxy. They're so far further advanced than us.
Yeah.
Yet you can fake a doctorate.
She stole the research from a professor. Yeah. Yep. So these did come up earlier in the Aphra series.
Okay.
So I thought that was a really cool tie-in that kind of, it's like her past coming back to literally and figuratively haunt her.
Yeah, I guess so. And so this explains why she knows so much about them and why she's so keen to run away from them.
Yep.
So they do. They do get away from them, of course. But they're confronted by the queen, who mesmerizes or hypnotizes Han first. And so he's kind of captured and taken away. And so then that leaves Leia, Aphra, and Sana again, who snatch one of the symbiotes. Actually, it was I think, 000 who grabbed one?
Yeah.
Since he's a droid, it won't affect him. And they take it to Black Chrysantin, who, of course, is accompanying Aphra. But Wookiees are not very well received on this planet, so he got his butt whooped. And his, I don't know if he's left for dead or just beaten unconscious. But 000 kind of props him up. And then, very gross. Well, you don't really see anything, but it's what's in your imagination. With a saw, kind of cuts open the back of his head and sticks on the symbiote. And so Black Chrysantin comes to, and he's in this berserker rage. And he just starts beating the crap out of everybody.
Yes, I love the obvious references to Alien in this arc. Which is really cool. More specifically, like, Prometheus, like, the newer movies. You know, because, like, in the original Alien, you know, when you would get infected by the, you know, the facehuggers, they, you know, they would just grow inside of you, and you'd have, like, the chest bursters. But with Prometheus, when you were infected, it would actually, like, take over in a way and make a person more primal and dangerous. So, interesting take. Kind of put
yeah,
that.
It's very much like this.
Yeah.
So Black Chrysantin is doing his thing, and he's or actually, you know, he only starts to do that in part four, but you can tell it's not going to be a good time for these Queen's guards, because Black Chrysantin is a huge Wookiee. Like he's like the Shaquille O'Neal of Wookiees. And he's got a bad attitude too. And then there's 000 kind of zings Leia a couple times in the book, which I thought was a relevant talking point about how 000 sort of makes reference to the fact that maybe Leia would prefer it if Han and Luke were more like droids, because at least droids listen. And she seems to be constantly angry with her friends because they never pay attention to her orders. And Leia wasn't totally pleased with that.
Yeah, I really liked how he was tapping into her insecurities as a leader, you know, coming up in the rebellion and obviously being, you know, a head figure. So, you know, those kind of pressures are on, and obviously she feels for Luke and Han, and, you know, and they are friends, they are a family. So, you know, it's a weird dynamic when you think about it. You know, how close they are, but they are also not co-workers, but it's almost like they're, you know, soldiers together in a war, while being friends, while still having like a hierarchy of orders.
Yeah, I mean, Leia among in this group, Leia's still the boss.
Yeah.
Yet nobody listens to her. You know, Luke's making his own choices. He's not following orders. She told him that she'd court-martial him back to moisture farming, and yet he disobeys her anyway. So yeah, I like what you said. I like how you phrase that in terms of 000 sort of zeroing in on Leia's insecurity as a leader and illustrating that for us for a brief moment. Because I guess we always seem to think that Leia was sort of invincible that way, and everybody just did what she said. But in this case, not so much.
Right.
And that's kind of where this issue ends. But I thought overall the art in this one was much better. And even though it's a completely different style, way different than what LaRocco was doing in previous issues. And even though this has a more childlike quality to it, I thought at least it's original.
Absolutely. And
the faces are all this guy's. The pencils in this one are Andrea Brocardo, nice Italian boy. yeah, at least it's totally original art. He wasn't trying to steal faces from the movie and you know, put them into his book. He just did his thing. And it may not be everybody's thing, but I kind of dug it.
Absolutely. I mean, I love the design and the artwork on the guards, you know, with the cross helmet look. I think a lot of that artwork really shines in this issue, especially, you know, the detail on those.
You know what I noticed, not specifically in this issue, but for the whole arc, the three parts so far, Leia's outfit. It's very reminiscent to me of what she's wearing in Rebels when we meet her as a young girl.
Oh, I would not have caught that.
Interesting to just go back and compare the two. Like the layout, if I can say that, of the outfit is not the same, but the color scheme is. You'll notice it, you'll see and go, "Oh, I get it." Like I could see this person shopping at the same store all these years.
Right, right. Huh. Some nice little continuity there.
Yeah, it's a mashup kind of like what she wore in Rebels and what Padme wore in Attack of the Clones. That's kind of how I looked at it.
Oh, yeah, like the tighter white outfit. Yep. Yep.
And then into part 4, Star Wars issue 32. It starts off with, as I mentioned, Black Chrysanthemum in total berserker mode, laying waste to all kinds of guards and just tearing them to pieces. And, you know, I thought it was interesting maneuvering throughout the series to have Black Chrysanthemum fill this role as opposed to Chewie, because way back in issue 2, Han intentionally left Chewie behind at the Rebel base, saying that, you know, Wookiees are not well received on this planet, so just sit this one out. And of course, Chewie protests, but we still get to see a Wookiee in action. And as we know, Han was enslaved, and the Queen orders Aphra killed. So Aphra thinks she's made out like a bandit in this. She's got her little Jedi. What was it, like a big crystal? It was a big, like, football-sized crystal.
Mm-hmm.
And the Queen managed to activate it. And we don't find out how she activated it, but it's done. And so Aphra's on her way off planet looking for a new ship because Han crashed hers. And lo and behold, the Queen says, "I'd make sure she doesn't leave orbit."
Of course.
Of course. The betrayal again. And then as Aphra is looking to get out, she starts talking to Rur, the Jedi who inhabits that crystal. And he spends a good few panels pointing out how he can sense Aphra's regret and guilt, not only over, you know, her betrayal to Luke and the group in this arc, but throughout her life and career, which is interesting because he's only just met her.
Right.
Do we know anything else about the Jedi trapped in this crystal other than what we've learned in this arc?
I'm trying to think back to the first arc for Aphra.
He was part of some, or the crystal was captured by some order, correct?
Right, right. So this Jedi, quote unquote, you know, that's in the crystal, was a leader of the Ordu Aspectu, that her father was, you know, researching. You know, there's no sense that he would be like an all-knowing, you know, being. So as far as, you know, him talking to Aphra, I feel like part of it is manipulation. Which you can get a sense of that, you know, in the flashbacks, sort of, you know, from that first arc. You know, I feel like it's kind of just him manipulating Aphra.
Manipulating as in to his own end?
So, I wouldn't quite know what his goal would be. You know, if it's to, leave this crystal. See, now this is where my memory's kind of fading me. I feel like there was a bit in the arc where he was trying to kind of transfer out of the crystal.
In the Dr. Aphra series?
Yeah.
Oh, that's interesting.
I'd have to go back just to kind of fact check on that.
So we have heard this guy's voice before.
Yeah.
Oh, that's pretty cool. I had no clue. I thought this was the first time we hear from this guy.
No.
All right, so I'm sure we will learn more about this guy at some point, maybe even in issue 5. So Roar, like I said, Roar's been activated by the Queen, and he's pointing out Aphra's regret and guilt, which seems, based on the expression on Aphra's face as he's saying this, it hits home. She knows he's right. And then Sana makes a deal with the murder droids that if they help her save the rebels, she'll help them kill Aphra. She's still on this kill Aphra thing. Right. She's really not an Aphra fan. And of course, the droids are like, sure, murder's great. We'll help you kill anybody. They just want to kill people. And then Luke, of course, he's attempting escape from the Queen. He's strapped to a table. But Aphra comes back and, I guess, trying to atone for her guilt. Maybe we're trying to spring Luke free. She also orchestrates a symbiote taking over Luke. And the issue ends with one of these little, we'll just call them the face huggers. On Luke's back, it's tapped into his brain stem or whatever. And his eyes have all gone red. His lightsaber's ignited. I think he says something to the effect of, like, bow to your king or something like that.
He says, yep, bow before your king. Yeah.
Yeah, and the look on his face again. LaRocca, what are you doing? I don't understand.
Yeah, it's, you know, now I'm like, yeah, so I'm looking at this example of it. It's got that just uncanny, weird, what do they call that? Uncanny Valley kind of. It's like trying to be a photograph, but it's a com. You know, it's so bizarre.
It's trying to be photo real, but it's clearly not. Like, if you go back a few other pages, he doesn't do that in certain situations, and it actually works better.
Yeah.
So I mean, if I could tell Kieran Gillen, I'd be like, dude, just do you, man. Don't try and make this photo real. It doesn't work. Like, even on earlier pages where you see Han in the guard suit when he's been enslaved, that looks bad too.
Yeah.
Yes, it's the whole Uncanny Valley thing. Like, we can detect that, and it's not really well done.
No. I mean, when he's doing close-ups of, like, original characters, like the Queen, like, I actually really like that shot. It's, like, a few pages before the last, or it's, like, the page before the final splash page, where she's kind of, like, staring up almost, like, into the camera if it's a movie.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about.
Yeah. I think that looks pretty good. I mean, he's still kind of going for a photo real look, kind of, but it's not rendered from, like, a movie or a photo of an actor. So it plays off a little better.
Yeah, see, I'm looking at this version of the Queen versus the one that we got, say, in part one in the Screaming Citadel one-shot. And I know it's very comic booky, and her eyes are completely white, but I love that. Like, I love that version of the Queen as far as a comic book goes.
The white eyes? Is that early?
Yeah, like the white eye look is just that. That's just for this kind of character, in you know the gothic horror genre, sort of the retina-less, pupil-less eye works for me, and I thought that she looked great.
Yeah.
But once they brought her down to this almost photoreal looking person, to me she's too Naboo Queen.
I think it's just it's just inconsistent, and I think that's really just the only issue as far as having big issues goes, like, that I have with the arc.
If you're still open to that page, so you see the Queen on that one panel, but then on the next page, if you look at Aphra, it's a completely different style.
Yeah.
From the same artist. Like, what? Ah.
So, I mean, it just kind of, like, you know, when it goes to the inconsistency in a comic book, in the artwork, it kind of just makes you wonder, it's like, how many processes is it going through? Like, are they giving it to one artist to start, someone else who's being uncredited to finish it off. Like, you know, because sometimes I know artists who have a lot on their plate. Sometimes they'll have someone else that they trust kind of help them out. I don't know if that's just more so in the indie side of things. I couldn't imagine that happening in Marvel or DC or any of those, but it's possible.
Yeah, I suppose it could be possible. Anyway, so we're through part four, and I have yet to read part five, but you have, so you'll take us to the finish line here with part five.
Yep. So, all right, so to start, you know, so it opens up with Luke and the Queen kind of facing off.
I'm sorry to cut you off. This is Dr. Aphra number 8?
This is Aphra number 8, yep.
And this is Kieran Gillen and Andrea Brocardo.
So Brocardo's back with the artwork. So, you know, a little more consistent with his work. So I think, you know, as far as his art goes, I think, you know, we both can kind of agree that, you know, I think his artwork's a little more in line with what we would expect. You know, it doesn't have those awkward Uncanny Valley shots.
It certainly does not.
You know, it's a little more, you know, his style, and I like it, especially for this gothic tone. So it opens up with Luke and the Queen kind of facing off in a kind of psychic battle, which is totally not what I was expecting with this arc. You know, I really kind of thought maybe, you know, it might have been cool if, you know, because he's taken over, maybe, you know, he can kind of tap into these Jedi powers, and maybe once he's freed from this control, maybe he doesn't remember quite as much, so we can kind of get a snapshot into what he's capable of, but they didn't quite take us there. So, not saying it's necessarily a bad thing, just wasn't what I was expecting. So Dr. Aphra, you know, she has the crystal, and she, so it kind of goes back and forth, but I'll stick with that arc. That part of the issue. So she introduces this crystal to Luke, and so Luke starts to converse with Rourke. And, you know, so they kind of do this cool shot where Luke is kind of sitting across from the Queen, and they're kind of, their minds, which the artwork kind of, like, representative of it, shows these, the two parasites. So it's kind of like the brains of these parasites going at it. And they're each trying to control the other. So it's more mind power than, you know, outward force powers. And so Roar kind of talks him through breaking the connection with the parasite. And he kind of pushes back, because you can kind of tell that Roar is trying to tap into his insecurities of being... of not being a, you know, a formidable Jedi yet. So, you know, I think that was really interesting. You know, he calls him envious, and he's just kind of tapping into all of that. You know, that he's not, he doesn't mention Obi-Wan, but you can kind of tell that, you know, he's kind of tapping into Luke's feelings.
Luke wants to be more powerful. He exactly. wants to be able, it's like Anakin, where he wanted to be able to save his friends at the drop of a hat, but he's not there.
Exactly. But Luke kind of learns from this kind of tug of war with Rur. And he, you know, he understands it's more so not tapping into pure power. It's tapping into your feelings as a Jedi. So kind of making it more human and more intimate. So he, you know, he breaks from the parasite, and the Queen's kind of taken aback by this. Because she just assumed that, you know, a Jedi is more about strength and whatnot. So she's kind of in a state of shock. And, you know, Luke has this good quote where it's like, the Jedi feel free. And he slashes her with the lightsaber, and he kills the Queen. And Aphra's just kind of, like, shocked that he didn't follow Rur's advice and didn't kind of give in to this crystal and that entity. So with that, with the Queen dying, her control over the guards and her two kind of main, I forget the names, but the two minions, the guy and the girl, that connection is broken. And actually, it's funny, Han, because he's still connected with the parasite, he kind of becomes the king temporarily. And they want to follow him. And it's actually really funny. And so Sana and Leia are like, do you really want to be king? Do you want to be in charge and tell people what to do? He's like, no, you're right. So he kind of snaps out of the parasite control. And
that's kind of weird, isn't it? Like, Luke needed a Jedi Master to coach him out of breaking the parasite, whereas Leia and Sana just had to crack wise to get Han to do it.
I think part of it, and what I was getting, was that because the Queen died, so kind of they're all connected in a way. So the connections were kind of weak once that happened.
Without the Queen as sort of the backbone?
Exactly. So, like, once the Queen died, because, you know, they're calling it the Hive. You know, this is like a hive of vampire-like things. So, yeah. So once the Queen's dead, it all kind of crumbles going down. So I'm assuming that, the connection was weakened. Leia kills... did we get a name for the guy in red? I don't quite remember his name.
The guy in red? Probably. I just don't know what it is. Guy.
So, yeah. So, Leia shoots him. So, that kind of further weakens the connections.
Was this that guy that looked like Snoke?
Yeah. Yeah, like a Nosferatu Snoke-looking...
Yeah, I don't recall ever seeing a name for him. Like, even if you told me his name, didn't see that.
So he's just I was just calling him Snoke/Nosferatu.
Snoke Feratu,
I like it. So before Han frees himself from the parasite, he actually frees kind of all the people that were living in like the underbelly of the Citadel. So he kind of totally blanking on the word for it. He liberates them. There you go. I need like a thesaurus handy. So Aphra takes the crystal. She leaves off of the planet. Luke's like, Luke is very upset with her. You know, he trusted her and he felt like he can't really trust her now that he, you know, after what she did with Roar and the crystal and, you know, she didn't quite understand why he felt betrayed. So she was like, I'm just trying to help you, you know? So they kind of separate. They go their separate ways. She leaves with the crystal and Kazantin, who has the parasite removed, again, just surgically from 000. So Sana, Luke, Leia, and Han take off together. And that was pretty much it. Oh, and then we flash back to the planet. And there's like these two... people who were liberated, and they're, you know, Aphra orders BT to burn down the Citadel. So as they're leaving, the Citadel is destroyed. And so there's this guy and this girl, and they kind of go in, they're like, you know, they know about the Queen, they know she collects rare artifacts, and they're like, well, maybe there's something of worth here. So they find the Queen's body with one remaining parasite living. Just kind of standing over the Queen, and the parasite jumps onto the girl, and she has a moment where she just says Skywalker, and they decide to leave the Citadel, and they allude to wanting to leave the planet. So it looks like whatever. I don't know with the parasite. I don't know if it all of a sudden implants someone else's memories into, because presumably this parasite was connected to the Queen, it looks like. So maybe now that this parasite's connected to this random girl, maybe it just implanted the Queen's memories into this girl.
It almost sounds like it's like a thumb drive carrying around the Queen's memories.
Right, it seems that way. So it was just kind of this cool last shot of her with like the pupilless eyes with the white, and she actually gets the... She almost looks like she's transforming into the Queen, which was really cool. You know, she gets, like, this gash scar across her face, almost like a Kylo Ren look. She gets those red triangles growing below her eyes. She just looks like she's, like, morphing into the Queen, which is pretty cool. And she just says, our future is elsewhere. So... I don't know if they're going to go after Skywalker, if she's going to go build a hive somewhere else. We'll have to see where that comes back.
Yeah, I guess it ends on a note where if they come back, yeah, we told you, we strongly hinted at that. But if they'd never get to it, well, it was kind of wrapped up clean enough anyway. And
right.
How are these two little dopes going to get off the planet anyway?
I feel like it leaves room for like maybe a really good annual. You know, we're not too far away from the next annual. So that might be a really cool one shot. So we'll have to see.
Just wrap that up.
Yeah. Yeah, because the annuals, for the most part, are, you know, very separate from whatever's going on in the main story anyway. So, we'll see.
Yeah, there you go. That was it. So, what do you take out of this arc?
The big takeaways. I don't know. So, I feel like Rur is going to be a bigger deal later on. You know, Aphra still has the crystal. So, I'm feeling like he might be a big bad down the line. Somehow gets out of the crystal some way, and then we have like this pseudo Jedi on the loose. Could be interesting. But I don't know, we run the risk of him kind of, you know, overshadowing Vader. So I don't know. It's interesting. I know. What do you think?
Well, it is a fine line. I mean, I don't know what Rur knows about what's going on in the galaxy these days. I'm not sure if he's aware that there are no Jedi left and that Luke Skywalker that he just met is sort of the last hope. Do you know if he knows that?
No, I don't get a sense that he is fully up to date on what's going on.
Yeah, so I mean, if he finds a way to you know, leap from the crystal into a new body, and maybe that's how it dovetails with these two people that we saw at the end.
Yeah, that's it. You know, because if the queen has taken over the woman's body, there's still kind of that guy that she's hanging with. If he could somehow download himself into the guy. I don't know. It's interesting.
They take each other out and clean up each other's storylines, right?
Yeah. I mean, what I could have seen them doing if Vader was still going on, I could see Vader going toe-to-toe with Rur and Vader taking him out. If Vader was still, you know, in this timeline rather than the new Vader kind of going back to episode 3.
Yeah, because we haven't seen Vader for a while now, right? Going back to maybe the early 20s in the last Flight of the Harbinger was the last time we saw Vader.
Right. So really, Vader's been put on a hiatus in this, you know, pre-episode 5 time frame. So, I don't know. Now we don't really quite know what he's up to for quite some time. So that could have been, maybe they'll do a one shot. Again, there's plenty of opportunities. You know, they could always do a 5-part miniseries just for Vader, you know. I wouldn't mind seeing like a 5-part, 6-part Vader versus Rur arc, just random, you know, you can get it as a trade.
That would be pretty cool. I think they might be doing something to that effect in the Vader Volume 2, where Vader's been dispatched by Palpatine to go get your own damn crystal. Don't be lazy and take one of these old Jedi lightsaber crystals. Go find your own.
Right, right.
But yeah, I guess there's a chance to work him in there. Other than that, I mean, I don't know what I take out of this. I mean, this is sort of the blessing and curse of Star Wars comics, where, you know, we all love the medium, we all love comic books, but they are so locked into continuity that they can't really do anything that impacts it. They can reference it, they can, you know, touch on it here and there, but it's really tough to impact the continuity.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like until episode 9 is done, said and done, and maybe they do something you know, in that 30-year gap, the comic medium won't really inform the continuity as much, like you were saying. It's very hard to, and it, I feel like because of that, we need to really focus in on character development and so much the, and more so the relationships. I mean, which is also why I think it's so exciting that we have Dr. Aphra and Sana involved, because their fates are still very much up in the air. So, yeah. You know,
where are these two?
Exactly. So, you know, what happened to them? What's their story? You know, while I'm sure we all still love, you know, reading about Han, Luke, Leia, Vader, you know, we know their fate. And all that's still very much tied in. But as far as the other stuff, I mean, that's all up in the air. And I think that can help keep people coming back.
Yeah, you can almost envision those two in a bit of a collision course, right? It's like Sana wants a piece of Aphra bad, and we know they have a history together. There's a bit of bad blood there.
Right, so that's a showdown I'm looking forward to.
Yeah, and it looks like part of that bad blood might be some of the reason for the guilt and regret that Rur was talking to Aphra about.
Right, right. Because there's still a lot that hasn't been told yet between the two. So, you know, I'm looking forward to that being filled in. I like the hints. I like that the tension was built up more between that, you know, those characters. Yeah, I think that was another bonus or another plus side to this arc in particular. And I also thought it was just what I really liked is that it was refreshing just stylistically. You know, it's not something that we have gotten. So I think the comics at least have freedom in that sense, that we're able to get these, you know, these gothic tales or, you know, heist stories, wherever they decide to take, you know, the style. You know, I think, I'm definitely along for the ride.
Well, that's just it. That's the conversation dominating fandom right now, right? The last week, the big story was Lord and Miller being excused from the Han Solo movie. And the fallout from that is, well, Lucasfilm is too risk averse to be creative and to take steps outside of their comfort zone. And, you know, I see this that argument from both sides, where I understand Kathleen Kennedy's position, where she needs to ensure that fans are happy and that shareholders are happy. And so far, the way that's worked is by doing something that's a little bit safe and predictable, i.e. it fits into the Star Wars mold. And we were promised standalones that might step outside the mold a little bit. But I think Lucasfilm got cold feet on that.
Yeah.
I don't know if you can really argue against that at this point.
You know, it's definitely a tight spot. You know, I'm not going to vilify Kathleen Kennedy at all, or Lucasfilm. You know, I think comics are one thing. You know, it's not much of a loss for the company, but I feel like if fans really don't take to a movie, that's much more of a bigger hit.
Oh yeah, there's hundreds of millions of dollars sunk into a movie.
Right. So
if you screw that up, your reputation takes a big permanent hit. I mean, they're getting dragged through the mud right now, but if Han Solo turns out to be a good movie, you know, they'll burnish that star again.
So I was a little confused. I know this is, you know, a bit of a tangent from comics, but how long into shooting were they?
I think it's a bit cloudy, but you know, anywhere from, you know, 3/4, give or take, that seems to be the consensus. Some people say as much as 90%.
Right. So I feel like how different could, what's his name that just came on? Ron Howard. Ron Howard. I mean, how different could he really make it if like 90% or even 75% of the movie was done? You know?
Well, I guess it depends on how much of that 75% they keep.
That's true. And what they decide to reshoot.
Yeah. So in the end, it might be almost a 50-50 thing.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. I mean, but I mean, like, there's direction, but there's also the script. So what I'm curious is, like, you know, if the script is funny, you know, if it's really funny, I mean, why aren't they getting a new writer? I mean, it's more than just the director's job. I mean, there's also a blueprint to it. So I'm curious as why is it all being put on the directors and not the writing? So I'm just kind of curious as to, like, because it all seemed that, like, the directors were making it funny or not, or tonally off. But, like, that would also be in the script. So I'm just very curious as to, like, what's really going on. You know, if there's other issues at play.
It's your guess is as good as mine. I mean, we talked about it at length in our last episode. Best I can guess is that the tone that Lord and Miller were delivering was not what Lucasfilm had envisioned, and they have a proclivity to go off script and allowed a little bit too much improvisation. Whereas, you know, Lawrence Kasdan, and I guess by extension Kathleen Kennedy, want you to stay on script.
Right. Okay, so that would make sense if they're not following the script. Because I'm assuming that they, you know, the script is approved and they weren't going to change their minds on that. But if they were taking it too far away from the script, then I could imagine that being an issue.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's weird because, I mean, it's not like Lord and Miller were an unknown quantity. You knew what you were getting.
Right, it comes with hiring. Yeah.
Yeah, and then you fire them. It's puzzling. It's unfortunate, but I'm giving Lucasfilm the benefit of the doubt until they make a couple of bad movies.
Right.
Anyway, just to bring this all back around, if you realize that you can't do different takes and different tones in your movies, at least not yet, then you can do that in the comics. As they just did. They did this whole Screaming Citadel crossover. And they've done other work too. That doesn't necessarily squeeze into the Star Wars box.
Right.
And you can get away with it there.
And I think it's appreciated by fans. You know, I can't speak for everyone, obviously. But, I mean, I've been loving it.
Yeah, I mean, Star Wars comic book readers, I think, are a very small sliver of the entire Star Wars fandom. And even if you say, well, listen, if you want different, go read a comic. People are going to look at you and go, no, I'm not a comic book guy.
Right. I mean, that's doing that. That, I mean, that's my fiance. He won't touch a comic book.
Well, there you go. Right. So there might be people who want different stuff out of Star Wars who, if they're not willing to pick up a book or a comic, they're just going to have to wait. It doesn't seem like Lucasfilm is ready to take that step yet to do something totally different.
Right. But I, you know, we'll see. I'm trying to think. So was there any news that we didn't touch on?
Not really.
I think we got all the announcements much later, earlier on. So
yeah, we saw some preview art for Captain Phasma, which is coming in September. And the only other thing that came around was a little bit of, I don't want to say a leak, but a little bit of a list of writers that are going to be in that A Certain Point of View anthology.
That's right.
Yeah, Gary Whitta's writing a story, and of course he had a large hand in Rogue One, and he's helping to bridge the gap even tighter between A New Hope and Rogue One in that book. Now there's going to be a story about Aunt Beru. There's even going to be a story about the trash compactor monster, which I find is really funny.
That makes more sense than the Aunt Beru story, but I don't know. We'll see.
It's probably going to be absurd, but it might actually be really funny.
Yeah.
Pablo Hidalgo is doing a story about Tarkin, and Will Wheaton is doing a story about the rebels left behind on Yavin.
Oh, I didn't know you. I love Will Wheaton. That's awesome.
So yeah, there we go. That's that. I mean, I think that's basically all the Star Wars news as far as printed stuff goes that, mm-hmm. that dropped in the last little while. It's been pretty quiet on that front.
Right, right. I mean, once the episode 8 hype kind of kicks in more so, because I think we're getting a trailer again, I read, very soon.
It seems, yeah, and that's another topic we talked about in episode 81, that I don't think that they planned on doing a trailer this soon. But because of the fiasco with Han Solo, they're not going to have a teaser for D23 or San Diego. This is me just throwing things at the wall. I feel like they were going to tease Han Solo at one of these two events, and now they can't because they don't have anything to tease. So they're rushing a teaser trailer into production. The whole backbone of my theory is that all that news broke the same week. The approval for a new trailer, the firing of Lord and Miller, all these things started happening at once. And of course, they may be independent from one another, but I tend to think that the plan is we need something for these events. So one, we'll announce the title of the Han Solo movie at one of them, and we'll do a teaser for The Last Jedi at another. That's my guess.
And that's good enough for fans, honestly. That's, everyone will eat that up.
They need something. I mean, it's been a rough couple weeks for Lucasfilm, so they need to start getting some good vibes out there again.
Right, right. And this is the last season of Rebels coming up, right? So I feel like they're going to have to start teasing whatever's next for the small screen pretty soon.
Absolutely. Well, Forces of Destiny, speaking of small screens, Forces of Destiny is going to drop on Monday, July 3rd.
Oh, yeah.
So here's your official warning to get your... you can't get your PVRs out, but be tuned in to, I guess, maybe the Star Wars channel on YouTube, because that's coming on Monday.
Right, that's all online content, right?
Yeah, so they're going to drop one of them on Monday. I'm not sure what the whole release schedule is, but they're starting on Monday, July 3rd, and then they'll air on TV on Disney XD or just regular old Disney Channel starting on July 9th.
Okay.
And we'll touch on this more in episode 82. That's coming. So I'm excited about that.
Awesome.
So any last thoughts about Screaming Citadel before we wrap it up?
No, nothing specific. Overall, I'm very happy with it. As a diehard horror fan, I liked having little tidbits of it here, so they definitely satiated that that thirst for me.
I like the style. I like the mashup of different genres. They, a little bit of horror, a little bit of gothic, some alien nods in there. I found it overall a little bit flat. Really, wasn't terribly exciting. But again, like we said earlier in the show, the writers are working in such a tight box. They can't do anything too huge, too epic at this point.
Exactly. So you kind of just have to, we can't set our expectations way too high for these stories. Just kind of have to enjoy it for what it is as far as what the medium can offer.
Yeah, and I think what it does is it was a bit of a sell job on Dr. Aphra. I think this was designed to put this character in front of more eyeballs who were not reading the Dr. Aphra title, like me, and to get people a little bit more interested in the character. And, they showed the sassy, sarcastic, smart aleck side, as they always do. And I guess you can speak better to this. This may be the first time that we saw some vulnerability from Dr. Aphra.
In relation to the main cast, definitely. We get a little bit of that with her father, for sure. That relationship there. They're slowly peeling the layers, which I'm absolutely loving. I think they're doing such a great job with the character. I'm so excited to see where they take her moving forward after this arc, considering that she has the crystal and, it's so up in the air. Like we were saying, her fate isn't tied into what we already know. Like, anything could happen with her.
Yeah.
So I think
she's not an official member of the Rebellion. She's not a member of the Empire. I mean, she's kind of in the bad books of both. But she's slippery enough that she could disappear to the other side of the galaxy and never be heard from again.
Absolutely. So
yeah, there's who knows what they'll do with her. Do you think her fate or her life as a character is tied to either comics or novels if they go that route with her? Or do you think she can make a leap to animated or yeah. live action?
I mean, at the least, animated. I don't think she's tied just to comics and novels. I think they could definitely do something really cool with her in some animated show. As far as live action, maybe. You know, what's tough with live action is they don't do that. It's not like Marvel. You know, they don't do that many a year. So until they start doing more standalones, I can't see them kind of sacrificing a block for her just yet.
They have to build interest in the character to a critical mass, right?
Absolutely. I mean, they could definitely work her into some already established story in live action. But I mean, I think we'd have to wait and see where they take the movies, or if they decide to do live action TV, which I think they should. But I don't know what they have planned, because right now they just have the episodes. You know, Rogue One's out, Han Solo's coming up, and we don't really know what they're doing after that. You know, we're anticipating Obi-Wan, you know. But once Episode 9 comes out, I'm assuming that they're just going to do standalones for a while. So I feel like there'll be room for her in a few years, probably once that happens.
Do you think... Well, I agree with you, for sure. If this character keeps going on this path, at some point, she's going to be as popular as Ahsoka. Now, let me put this to you. Do you think it's a missed opportunity not having her as a part of the Forces of Destiny series?
Yeah. Yeah, actually. You know, what's interesting is because she is a queer character, I wonder if they're afraid of putting her on TV. On a children's channel. You know, me personally, obviously, you know, I think it should happen. I think there should be some visibility for kids. But I'm wondering if some of that might be a factor. Some of the political background.
Well, maybe on the opposite end of that spectrum, the argument applies where because she's queer, it deserves a better treatment than you can do in a 2 to 3 minute episode.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I definitely think she deserves fuller story. Because, like, really, the Forces of Destiny, yeah, these are already kind of established characters that the mainstream fans, you know, who just watch the movies really know.
These are going to, like, fill in gaps and,
yeah,
and little character pieces on characters we already know.
Right. Where Aphra, I feel like she needs more of a platform, like an introduction for kind of the larger audience of fans.
Yeah, I wonder if you could tease Aphra in, say, a Leia episode or something, but then... I don't know. It's probably too complicated. You're probably getting into a little bit of a wasp nest with bringing Dr. Aphra into Forces of Destiny, mm-hmm. not doing the character justice or giving her a half-assed intro to animation or you know, actual TV programming. I guess maybe that doesn't work. I don't know. I think in my head it's a missed opportunity.
Yeah.
But it's probably more complicated than I'm giving it credit for.
You know, you definitely want it to be done right. I think the next big logical step is a novel, for sure.
A video game.
She is in one of them, actually.
Really?
Not like a big platform one. She's in the one of the mobile games.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay, well, I mean, it's a start, but yeah, get her into a console game. Do a Dr. Aphra console game.
Yeah, I think she's in Force Arena. That one. But a console game, yeah, get her into Battlefront. would be kind of cool.
Put her as a character in Battlefront, but could you do a Dr. Aphra game? I mean, here we go. We're going on down the rabbit hole. Could we do a Dr. Aphra video game?
I think absolutely. I mean, just not to just go back to Battlefront, but Battlefront 2, the lead character is an unknown Imperial soldier in the story mode. So I think if they can, you know, do that, I definitely think Aphra could, you know, and it would be this really cool, like, oh, see, now the gears are turning. You're doing this to me, Kyle. They could do like a really cool Indiana Jones in space with her. Like going out. You're, you know, the objectives, the missions of the game could be exploring planets, finding artifacts. Oh my god, it would be so awesome.
Yeah, I mean she's off chasing a certain artifact, and for us as players and viewers, it's an interesting artifact because we can kind of infer from the name of the artifact, what it is and what it could possibly mean. And simultaneously, either Vader is after her and you're constantly trying to evade Vader, or a group of bounty hunters.
Yeah.
That Vader has dispatched. So you can have these cutscenes where Darth Vader's a part of it too. And that's a way to get Aphra involved.
Oh, that would be so cool. And that would bring it to a bigger audience. You know what I mean? For sure. Because I feel like if, you know, a Star Wars fan isn't big into the novels or the comics, they at least, most of them, at least probably have tried the video games. That would probably be the next big, you know, group of fandom, you know, fans right there. So, yeah. Oh, man, that would be so cool.
a video game with a tie-in novel, just like Battlefront and Inferno Squad.
Yeah. Oh, they should hire you. Lucasfilm should hire you. Get them.
From your lips to whoever's ears. I think we should end on that note.
Yeah. So all the listeners, start writing to Lucasfilm. Let's get an Aphra game going.
I would pony up for that game for sure. All right, Steve, so where can people find you between now and the next time we get back together?
They can find me on the Twitter at JoangoFett.
Awesome. And as always, I'm at Tumbling Saber on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Come give us a follow. We typically follow back any and all Star Wars fans. We just love talking about the galaxy far, far away. And until episode 82 of the Tumbling Saber podcast, have yourselves a great weekend. Go check out StarWarsCommonwealth.com. You know all the players there, and also the brand new member of the family, San Diego Sabres Radio Podcast. Go check it out. Spend some time this weekend on those guys, and we'll catch you in episode 82. Bye for now. You've been listening to Journals of the Willing from the Tumbling Saber team, a member of the Star Wars Commonwealth Podcast Network. Learn more about the network and its members at StarWarsCommonwealth.com.